lot of interest was there in blockchain as well. So when it comes to blockchain, they were obviously not very concerned about the private cryptocurrencies aspect, but they were not against the tech. That's what they, that's the stance they have maintained even till date. So even though there are a lot of regulatory concerns, the blockchain aspects are always well respected, and I think they believe always it's not just a buzzword. People regard it that it's a good, really good research skill for people or the companies to adopt as well whenever there is a really good use case.
Welcome to the Ocean Missions Campfire Podcast, where we explore Ocean Protocol, Web3, and blockchain data. So today we're going to be speaking with Prakash from the Indian Ocean Outreach Program. Welcome to the podcast, Prakash.
Thanks, Scotty. Yeah, pleasure to be here.
I was wondering if you could just tell us a bit about your background, a bit about yourself, and what it was that led you to Ocean Protocol.
Yeah, I think I'll start off with a long story short version. I think my switching careers or switching paths is in search of learning is not new to me. So my first switch began in 2015, where I actually completed medicine, but I wanted to be a technologist, more of a one-to-many than one-to-one. So I did my engineering master's as well, where I had a chance to do it in an Institute of Technology at one of the leading institutes in India. But essentially, it was like a really good master's program that gave us exposure to a lot of engineering degrees as well as project experience. And we had the liberty to choose a lot of new stuff that we wanted to learn. And I kind of majored in more of engineering tech in terms of AI products and innovations. So that was the beginning of my data science experience, or even health data experience, if you would say so. And immediately after that, I think my industrial experience gave me a lot of bandwidth to learn a lot of stuff related to health tech and engineering, and even respect to product management and project management. So that gave me the overview of what's possible in the industry and why a lot of doctors are actually missing out on all of this stuff. And that's how the genesis started. Eventually, over a point, what kind of stopped me a bit was a lot of solutions that we build. It's always restricted in silos. So like, I develop a solution, it's going to be held under patents. Yeah, rarely do I find a lot of cross-border and seamless innovations happening, right? I think that's the major drawback within the Web2 ecosystems. And once the pandemic hit, I kind of researched more on private AI. I believe private AI had a lot of scope in developing the scope of projects to be involved in a lot of applications, right? It's not just you develop a solution, it's only for one sector or one geography. It's very limiting. So that's when I started reading a little more about private AI when it came to doing a bit of research on private AI in terms of vaccination passports, but that was just the beginning. So after that, naturally my interest towards AI and blockchain kind of increased. And it didn't really hit the impact of cryptocurrencies in general didn't hit me until middle of the pandemic, right? Somewhere around middle of 2020. And that's where my learning curve increased. And then I knew, okay, what's actually been possible. Ethereum is obviously the first gateway for a lot of people who try to get beneath the investing layer, right? So once I got into that, then I think that began my search. I always found like DeFi ecosystem is very mature, but what about AI? What about data science? Is the technology not robust enough to handle these operations, or what is the limiting factor? This was my begging question, and I kept searching for a lot of similar solutions. Then finally, I didn't notice Chainlink and Graph, but there was still something missing. I think that's kind of somehow led me to Ocean Protocol when I was looking at this. Friend actually pointed me from an investment perspective. Then I dig deeper, and then I saw the look at the whole activities behind the team and all the activities of the Ocean DAO, and I think that's what just spurred me onto it, because this is what I had been waiting for, maybe you could say that, because it's a lot of future attached to it, and the tech is already general enough to handle a lot of use cases. And whether it's health tech or general AI products, I think that's what I wanted to be, a builder of sorts. And that actually kind of brought me towards Ocean, so to speak. And that's probably why I'm still here, waiting to build a lot of stuff.
Great. And would you mind just defining private AI?
Yes, that's a very good question. I think it would be a lot useful for listeners. So imagine when, so there is this question began to me when we were discussing vaccine credentials. A lot of people were hesitant in sharing a lot of details, but when it comes to a public good, you tend to oversee a lot of things. And even if it tends, there are good intentions behind it, data can always be misused, and retrospectively, you know, for a lot of the terms and conditions always change, right? So that is something that always keeps changing, and you can never predict what happens. There is no proper audit and so much missing out. But in the Web2, I noticed that the private AI, in terms of private AI, means it's essentially placing a gating mechanism so that there is enough privacy for the user themselves. And even with the privacy, the share of privacy on a particular data or an identity, the stakeholder can still make use of the information. So we were exploring, while working on vaccine passports initiative with MIT PathCheck Labs. So this was a research group that was specifically researching on private AI, like differential privacy, federated learning, split learning. That's another technique that's really curious that I wanted to learn about. So these techniques were essentially a bit of data science and machine learning techniques, if you so to speak. So where it allows for people to perform computations and analysis on data assets in the traditional world, even if you add a lot of privacy layers on top of it, because there's always a Pareto frontier, you could call it, like you have to adjust for how much information can you actually reveal and how much you have to conceal, because if you're going to conceal 90% of the data identity, it will not be useful for research, right? So at least for research of public good, you still need to provide a decent parameter ratio. So I think adjusting for that ratio, research has had begun quite a lot. It has been quite for a while as well. All these techniques like differential privacy are very important in medical contexts, and federated learning, which was propagated by Google, it ensures that the data doesn't leave your mobile phones or laptop devices. So that's one way of safeguarding data privacy of sorts. So that essential entire gamut is referred to as private AI. I was wondering, why is this being hugely invested on groups like Facebook? Not just Facebook, there are so many folks coming up, Facebook, Amazon, they were actually investing in private AI research as well. So obviously, I think the answer to that is almost obvious, because Facebook, Google, they're known to harvest data. They're known to have so much trust issues with the governments, or even with the run-in with the GDPRs and leak governance bodies, right? So they took a step back and recognized, okay, data privacy is important. I think we need to be the first people to do that. That's what I recognized, but there was still something off with it. Why should I trust a data privacy mechanism by Facebook or by Google? There is always something off with that. So I was actually looking for a decentralized way of doing that. And I think that's when I came across a lot of protocols, but none of them were actually talking about it. And when I looked at Ocean, I had his first discussion with Trent. Like, you have so much traditional methods in the real life, so how is it compute to data actually effective? And he gave actually a very convincing answer, saying that these techniques have been around for quite a while, but they're not really blockchain effective, right? So because you need to ensure you're never uploading any sensitive data on the blockchain, you still need to maintain privacy while the data doesn't leave your site. So computer data makes sense in that regard. So as soon as I understood more of the concepts, that kind of made sense. Okay, this is why computer data is necessary, and that's why it's very effective. And I thought it was a proof of concept, but when I looked at the tech stack, it was been quite running for quite a while. I think that's what kind of captivated me to look at the space in more detail.
Cool. So private AI is then, excuse the layman's terms, basically this idea of accessing a lot of data from a lot of different sources and ensuring that that data doesn't necessarily leave the device that it's on. So whether that's the person's phone or laptop or so on, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. So there are two kinds of private AI. So one, you have to ensure that it doesn't leave your device, but you still can transmit a lot of models, right? So the complex AI models that are being built, you still have to send them to the decentralized service. Like, there's no escaping that. So, but at least that's still acceptable. You don't send your data, but you still send a bit of AI models so the powerful computers can actually make sensible information out of it. The biggest example that I can point out from techniques like federated learning is your Google Board on your mobile, right? So when you search for recommendations for that, what's the nearest place on your Gboard, the data doesn't actually reach Google. It's only the model that keeps being sent to Google so they can provide you with really good recommendations. So that is one context of it. The other way of private AI is concealing a lot of information. Like you conceal just enough so that your privacy is protected, that your product is GDPR regulated, right? So just making sure there's a really good gatekeeping mechanism so that you don't reveal sensitive information.
Awesome. And then compute to data obviously is one of the key features enabled by Ocean Protocol, and that basically enables data publishers to approve models to run on their data sets, and it also ensures that the data of the publisher is never leaving its premise, which is a nice thing for GDPR and so on. Yeah,
exactly. I think I noticed Ocean Stack also being respected in that regard, right? So given the mature ecosystem in Europe, I think they are very much on their way to do that. If any product is built out of Ocean, I think it will be compliant to a lot of, because when you're building a lot of top-down approaches like the Gaia-X mechanism, it's going to have to be GDPR compliant, right? There's no escaping that. So I think that gives us some proof of concept, at least even from an outsider perspective, that okay, what they're actually built is will be compliant to a lot of data privacy issues as well. Yeah.
So you've given us a really good sort of overview of your background and also an overview of Ocean Protocol. And you came to Ocean Protocol or the Ocean DAO with a proposal which was all about outreaching to the Indian ecosystem. So I thought it would be nice to just explore a bit more, you know, from your perspective, the state of the tech ecosystem in India as it is today, you know, how that has kind of matured and changed over the last 10, 15 or 20 years. It would be nice just to give like a really kind of just a bit of a brief overview of how the tech ecosystem has kind of emerged and changed over the years in India.
Yeah, just circling back. So when I was actually finishing my medicine or even my engineering masters, there is a lot of, you still have to look at what the research trends are and in terms of industry trends, right? So that's when the AI naturally caught my attention, and there was a lot of popular courses on being basic data science. Almost everyone was going to have to learn about it, and that interest basically kind of permeated towards all the institutions in India. I mean, I think at least every second person in the cream of institutes were asked to learn a lot of the AI techniques. Even if it's not part of the stream, they end up learning it purely out of interest and the echoes from the mature market side, right? Because even the hiring signals from the big corporates or even the big MNCs, they were actually giving a lot of signals and value, artificial intelligence and data analysis. So these techniques were well respected, and there's a lot of values in having that as a skill set when people get placed in the industry. So this was not just echoed across the industry. I think even the Indian startup ecosystem was valuing a lot of other AI projects as well. Not just in terms of projects that people submit to the governments, you also had a lot of startups coming in that field. And this also permeated towards a lot of initiatives like AI startups for the top 30 startups, top 20 startups, not just in health sector. I noticed that it was permeative to all the sectors that I could find. And that kind of, it made sense. It's not just something that only the corporates are doing. It's also something the government is taking notice of. That's something we kind of noticed. And towards the end of 2018, I would say, I also started observing what are the other space people are looking at. Then a lot of interest was there in blockchain as well. So when it comes to blockchain, they were obviously not very concerned about the private cryptocurrencies aspect, but they were not against the tech. That's the stance they have maintained even till date. So even though there are a lot of regulatory concerns, the blockchain aspects are always well respected, and I think they believe always it's not just a buzzword. People regarded that it's a good, really good research skill for people or the companies to adopt as well whenever there is a really good use case. So I think that's when I knew, okay, like this is not just a buzzword. There is actually being encouraged in a lot of investment aspects or even government initiatives as well. But the only drawback is that they're only focusing on private blockchain. Right? Private blockchain as in there's no cryptocurrencies involved. It's only for operating within a siloed ecosystem. So that again is not useful for anyone, right? I think at least we in the crypto ecosystem kind of recognize that. So, but it's always good to have both spaces being studied with intent, because we are still early. Like, it's a decade old and we still have to see so much innovation that's happening. And it just takes a short, steep curve for anything to kick off. So it is kicking off. I think the fundamentals are really strong for the crypto ecosystem. And I think with a lot of really good products and use cases being established, and I think the trust in the ecosystem will also grow. And yeah, I think to summarize, India's interest in AI has already been established, and the blockchain curiosity is always there. And people, if you look at the Indian ecosystem right now, the Web3 space, the Indians are a lot more working on it. And with the regulatory concerns, it doesn't matter. All they have to do is they just register the company out of Singapore or Dubai, and that's how you got to have Polygon, right? So they may have entities in India, but the actual registration, legal registration, there's always a workaround, because if you're doing something useful, nobody's gonna come and stop you. So it's only when you start engaging in nefarious activities, that's when the common crackdowns happen, right? So in terms of that, so Indians always have been bullish on the emerging tech. So the AI space has been a lot more mature compared to the crypto space. But I think it'll be, so the best thing about something like Ocean Protocol is it covers the best of both worlds. And even to code on Ocean, you don't need to know the blockchain specific language, but it definitely helps if you want to code on smart contracts. So these are the integrities that I feel a lot. These are the parallels that I observed that I feel I should really connect. And that was my first thesis while submitting the proposal. And I still believe that observation holds true, as you know, like almost 3 months into the proposal and having gathered some good fundamentals and feedback from the folks in India.
Yeah, and I think it's an important point. You know, I've sort of been following the blockchain ecosystem pretty closely for about 5 or 6 years now. And I know in 2017, there was a lot of ICO activity and a lot of people, you know, raising a lot of, you know, an astronomical amount of funds for some idea or white paper for some, you know, copy paste protocol. But it was pretty wild, and you still needed to have, you know, a pretty comprehensive understanding of the blockchain and solidity and all those things. And, you know, in the same way that NFTs have recently enabled use cases for artists and graphic designers and creative people all around the world to get involved with this stuff, I kind of feel that Ocean Protocol is doing that for data scientists and developers who work with data. There's just so many opportunities to start to get involved and create valuable data assets and then leverage the Ocean market to sell them. So yeah, I definitely think it's still just such an early proposition for the market. I think there's relatively high learning curve, but once you get through that learning curve, it really starts to open up. And I mean, you mentioned that it was only not even 2 years ago that you started to dive deep into this world of sort of cryptocurrencies, and you know, already you've started to fully grasp the concepts of Ocean Protocol and all those things, and you're highly active. So it's a pretty impressive achievement. So the Indian Outreach Program, as you mentioned, has been active for around 3 months now. What are some of the things that you've been doing to introduce Ocean Protocol to that ecosystem?
So one thing that I observed, that so when I did first made the proposal, I did realize there was a lot of ambitions in that, because I was on two minds whether to actually go for something that's actually scalable or do I apply for something. But I believe I actually wanted to learn a lot about the Ocean proposal while I'm working on the grant. So I think that was my intention behind going for really at least a midway sort of a grant, even if it was at that time. I think that even the first proposals had a cap of 20k, but I took the chance and I think I went for a really moderately ambitious grant, so that it gives enough time to work on it. I mean, work on not just the proposal, to understand so much more about the DAO ecosystem and what it's all about and what are the products that are being built. So the non-technical proposal kind of helped me in that regard. So, and then I started to attend a lot of working groups and to increase my knowledge of what Ocean Protocol is all about, what the community is all about, because community is also equally important, because just with high tech, you cannot just scale any blockchain network. I think you have to have a community approach, and you have to have a financially sound approach as well. So these things were important. And I had a feeling that all three boxes were being able to be ticked, and I could recognize that from the Ocean proposals that it's not just technical outreach programs, you also focus on community outreach, and you also have the ambassador programs as well. So it was actually the ambassador working group that I joined first to learn more about the ecosystem, and they actually encouraged, Lauren especially encouraged me to apply if I really wanted to lead the initiative. And that kind of started me, and I had some good guidance from Robin as well, what will be the best way to tackle this. And so I outlined a few, it was actually a lengthy proposal. If you actually go back and see, it's a much lengthier proposal. But in terms of deliverables, they were just at least, it could be reduced to at least 6-7 lines on what I wanted to do. And I knew that there could be a limitation in terms of physical events, but I still wanted to get some feedback from the community on what the events could be all about. And so that's how I kind of got in touch with the community as well, in terms of how the acceptance, in terms of discussion of events, and not just any network, not just Ocean Protocol, any network, how their acceptance is. And the awareness was actually a lot better than I expected. So my first 1 or 2 months was focusing on acceptable online activity while I grow the social media presence. That was one. And the also was writing a lot of activities while I continued to set the base for the events aspect as well. So that's where I kind of concentrated. Initially started on fundamentals first in terms of how the acceptance could be, and then actually started to focus on the event sprint that I outlined for the entire of Jan right now. So even though physical events are not possible right now, I have converted 3 strategies towards community calls with a lot of really interesting communities who have a lot more to interact as compared to a few physical events. So that's when I had started. So even now, I think it's well on track to complete by January end. So that was my initial thesis on having a bit of online activity as well as the events, and as well as including a grand hackathon, which was outlined in the proposal, which is what we had proposed to conduct by the end of January.
Do you want to maybe just tell us a bit more about the Indian Ocean hack and just a few more details? We're going to be publishing this around about the time that the Indian Ocean hack goes live. So people listening, you know, just maybe give them a bit of an overview of what's involved and what they could expect.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, the events that we are conducting, it has an organic lead up. It definitely leads towards the one single grand event. It's called the Indian Ocean Hack. So the details of it will go, I think it should go live in parallel to this podcast. And I think we have done a good job in having a lot of call to actions from the mini events and workshops that we conducted, that it will be in lead up to the final Ocean Hackathon, where it will not just be about tech deliverables, because a lot of hackathons are just developer heavy and there's not a lot of community-based tractions, right? So we have done something really well in terms of having really well-measured activities and bounties to start with, because if you want to start off our protocol that is not as popular as a layer 1 solution or an emerging layer 2 solution, you still have to be realistic. So that's the idea behind this hackathon. There's a lot of achievable quests out there, and in terms of anyone can deep dive, not just from the Indian ecosystem, but it's also a good measure of from the Ocean DAO ecosystem as well. I also placed, it's not just restricted to Indian, it's from anywhere in the world. It's also, I think we have placed some special categories for the best overseas team as well. So I have good, great hopes for engagement from the Ocean DAO community as well. So that's the idea. And on that regard, I think I'm really glad to say that the first partner bounty is coming from Ocean Missions. It's really nice to see that. And I really love the quest that you outlined in terms of the best use of EtherScan API, right? So I think that's a lot of very accessible for a lot of new developers as well. And it's really well constructed. And I believe it's going to be really exciting to work on that as well.
Yeah, awesome. I'm very much looking forward to it. I think it's going to be an exciting opportunity to to, as you say, rally the community building efforts that you've been putting in and focus all of that energy to this hackathon. And yeah, I mean, as you sort of touched on, the Etherscan and API has got a wealth of information hiding in there, and you know, it'd be great to sort of unleash some skills into to trying to uncover some interesting and useful insights there. So if people are interested in learning more about this, we're going to add links to it in the show notes. But for someone who's listening and they're wanting to get, you know, more involved with Ocean Protocol or the Indian Outreach Program, where can they go?
I think along this podcast description, we should have a lot of information to learn about Ocean Protocol in general, right? So I think the Ocean Academy was my gateway to learning a lot. So even if you don't intend to finish the course right away, right, I think you can still scroll to the materials to understand what it's all about, right? So I think the Ocean 101 is the best way to start, just to go through it, what it's all about, and you can really understand even from a very non-tech perspective. I'm sure you have also gone through that. So Ocean 101 is a very good place to start so that you don't get overwhelmed on what's going on in the GitHubs and on the website or the marketplace. It could be. So I think the Academy and Ocean 101 is the best way to start on Ocean Protocol. And in terms of the Indian Ocean Outreach Program, I think we figured that we need to have a website per se, but we just started with a few Notion pages to start with. But I believe there's a really good way to stitch a lot of initiatives we've been doing through a GitHub. Gitbook that we had just launched some time back, and it gets updated every 2-3 days, right? So that's a really good way to keep track of what we are also doing. And we also have a really good Discord server and exclusive Telegram group for builders, right? So that is also there. So these are the right channels to approach to us. And Twitter following has also reached a really good number. In fact, it has gone to a level of outreach that was much more than what we promised in our own ROI metrics. So that's a good way to look at things. We had sufficient partners to help with that. We also had Conma Labs from the Cardano community. They also had, even though they were not related to Ocean Protocol, but they were really helpful in having a lot of community activities online and offline as well. So that kind of helped us really well in having a really good local outreach. And we have had some good partners within the ecosystem as well. So, but yeah, when too much details are mentioned and when it's going to be present in a deliverable checklist next month or something, it's going to be a lot to grasp. So for that purpose, I think from a project management perspective, we are sticking to the GitHub, Gitbook process, where all you need to do is just scroll to the separate tabs with really interesting emojis decorating it, right? So the Gitbook is the way to understand what's going on in the Indian Ocean Outreach. And to get more details, they can hop onto our socials at any point of time. Telegram, Discord, these are the best way to reach out. And I think for the listeners, feel free to hop onto the social links and get in to see what's going on.
Great. And yeah, I double down on the Ocean Academy being such a useful and awesome resource. I know that when I was first trying to wrap my head around Ocean, going through the Academy was a great way to grasp all of the basic concepts, and it was another Ocean DAO initiative. So really cool to see the community coming together and building some interesting and useful resources there. Hey, well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. It was great to learn about the work that you've been doing and also learn about how much activity is happening in India at the moment and the focus that's being put on AI and specifically and then now, you know, how that's sort of morphing over into the Web3 and blockchain space. So yeah, just massive thank you for coming and discussing, and yeah, wishing you all the best and looking forward to the hackathon.
Sure, Scotty. Thanks a lot. You are an amazing host and kept me as at ease with the questions that were very relatable for anyone to listen to, right? So I think we had a lot to discuss, but we also had, it was nice to see that we had the breakdown from your perspective as well. It is really good to have this session and looking forward to more as well.
Thanks for listening to the Ocean Missions Campfire podcast. If you'd like to get started with on-chain data analysis, head over to oceanmissions.com and check out the work that we're doing there. If you enjoyed this episode, please feel free to like and subscribe. And also feel free to share a review. It helps with the podcast getting found so that other people can listen to it too. Thanks so much for your time, and we look forward to seeing you again.